Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to A Time for Justice. A Time for Justice is a show brought to you by the Elevated Places Network, and it is a show that discusses legal and current events in a roundtable discussion with legal minds. And tonight we have educators, we have people in the field of education, we have child social workers. We just have an array of professionals, as tonight we're going to talk about protecting Black children in educational settings. And as I was saying, on our show, A Time for Justice, we like to discuss this country's centuries-long failures to apply, uphold, and enforce the laws, and the overall failure of the legal system to give justice, and the negative impacts these failures have had on Black people and their Black families. Ultimately, we want fair dealing. We want justice under the law. But all too often, this is not the actions that we see. So our guest tonight, and we have a wonderful panel of sisters tonight. We have Black women who are in the field that are really going to inform us and enlighten us on what's really going on with our youth in these educational environments so we can look at solutions. Because our guests are not going to make excuses for the racist conduct often seen, which are really just distractions from the truth. And the truth, as we know, is the path to justice and equal protection. So let's talk about just, fair, and equitable solutions which are in the best interest of the people. Let's remove the distractions. I am your host. My name is Sister Pamela Muhammad, and I am an attorney. And I would like to just go ahead and open up the mic for our guest tonight. We have two people who've never been on our show, and then we also have a favorite expert who takes her time to come on. So I'm going to open up the mic with first introducing our sister, Lisa Muhammad. And Sister Lisa Muhammad is under her, this is her bio, she's under the leadership and the guidance of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Sister Lisa Muhammad has been a proud member of the Nation of Islam for the past 35 years. She's the wife of a student minister, Rodney Muhammad of Cambridge, Massachusetts, and the proud mother of their son, Rodney, who recently graduated from Northeastern University with a degree in behavioral neuroscience. In 1996, Sister Lisa received a master's degree in social work from Simmons College, and she furthermore graduated from North Carolina Central University, which is a historically Black college, where she earned an undergraduate degree in political science and pre-law. Sister Lisa has worked as a clinical social worker for the past 24 years, helping clients to heal in mind, body, and spirit. She has worked extensively with those suffering from trauma, and she lists certain trauma such as homicide or sexual abuse, as well as environmental stressors. She goes on to talk about other areas where she is a true conduit for mental, social, and emotional healing in the lives of both children and adults. And she says that she has dedicated her life to advocating for the rights of Black and Brown people, you know, encouraging them to work through their pain in order to tap into their higher self and improve their quality of life. Let me go ahead and open this wonderful sister's mic, Sister Lisa. Sister Lisa.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, Sister Lisa. Thank you so much, beloved, for joining us tonight.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Most Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his true servant, the last apostle, and I further bear witness and thank the Honorable Elijah Muhammad for leaving in his absence a divine warner, teacher, and guide, and the Most Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, for without God and the guidance that I've received from the Islam, I would not be able to do any of these things. So all praise I do to Allah, and thank you so much for having me on your panel.
All praise I do to Allah. Thank you so much, Lisa, Sister Lisa. And the next person I want to go ahead and bring up is our Sister Lavette Muhammad. And Sister Lavette, her bio reads as follows. She has accomplished 18 years of educational experience in the public school system. She began her educational journey at one of Houston's, at a school in Houston, working in Klein Intermediate. She's also worked in another ISD throughout her 16 years of being an educator. Sister Lavette graduated from the University of Houston with a Bachelor of Science in Criminal Justice and a minor in Political Science. She later received a master's degree from Grand Canyon University, and she began, after graduating, she continued her career as an educator in the public school system. And she says her educational background has led her to achieve many accomplishments in the field of educating our children, working as a sixth grader. She's a team leader, instructional coach, academic coach. And later, she actually was a department chair at one of the independent schools here in Houston. She goes on to say that she resides in Houston, Texas. She's a devoted and loving wife, and proud of mother of four. She's an inspirational and caring grandmother, eight grandchildren, and she's so excited to she's going to do another endeavor. She's going to open up her own child care center, and she's going to talk to us about that later, where she wants to help to create bright, brilliant minds. So, Sister Lavette, I'm going to open up your mic and welcome you to the show. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum salam, Sister Pam and the panel. I, too, would like to begin in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Most Merciful. I bear witness there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. Forever grateful for the Allah coming in the person of Master Farid Muhammad and resurrecting the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and teaching the guide in mercy and grace, and I miss the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. I am very honored and humbled to be a guest on the show, so excited to share and hear from the panel, you know, that we can come to a solution, you know, to help save our children in this sinking ship of the school system.
Yes, ma'am. Praise be to Allah, Sister Lavette. And so without further ado, let me go ahead and open up Dr. Deborah Green's mic and welcome her to the show. Dr. Green, let's see. So my sister, Dr. Deborah Green, has a EDD, an MSW, an MAC. She goes on to say that she is a certified mediator with the University of Houston Law Center. That's where she got that particular certification. She is also a president of the Property Association. She's the president of the National Black Child Development Institute. She is the founder and CEO of Advocacy Consultation Training Innovation and Operations Network. She's the actually on the board of the Lighthouse Inc. And she is, you know, just an all-around great person, authorized facilitator, darkness to light, stewards of children's training, and she's a professional facilitator, trainer, community activist, and educational consultant. building powerful partnerships with families, educators, and communities to promote success for all students. And that's Dr. Deborah Green. So let me open up my sister's mic. Dr. Green also works with us at the Coalition for the Preservation of the Black Family. And I just really love this sister. So, Dr. Green, welcome, welcome, welcome to our show.
Thank you. Greetings and assalamu alaikum.
Why, alaikum salam, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So welcome, welcome, welcome. So, you know, I just think this is awesome because we have an educator, we have a healer, and we have actually two people in the social work environment because we're going to talk about the trauma. What we want to talk about is how we must shape our own narratives and make our own decisions to protect our children. And so we've got, you know, the researchers on, we've got good social workers, we have teachers, and we're going to really delve into this problem because when we see trauma, well, and we see these problems presented in our community, and by problems, I mean the poverty. We know the discipline problem where the jailing of juveniles. We know the trauma, the criminalization that results in trauma. We know the pandemic has brought tremendous trauma. We know the racism has produced a lot of trauma. We know that there is a serious mishandling of our children in these schools environments, which, you know, which is why I just want to close my portion by saying that the, I want to quote from an article by Brother Jibril Muhammad, where he quotes the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and the minister says about education, that this system of education has run its course. He says, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us, education is the torchlight for civilization. If that torchlight is going out and you find the educational system in revolt against itself, then the civilization spawned by that educational process is on its way out as well. And then he also says in closing, I'm going to the next paragraph, he says, it is not that the students are bad. It's that the teaching, the methodology, the philosophy undergirding it have run its course. It's time for something better. And he talks about how this is why the dropout rate is terrific. You know, you can't get children to stay in an environment where they are not challenged. So I have people who are in the educational setting, in the schools. Talk to us about, you know, what are you all seeing in terms of what I just read about our children being in environments that have run their course?
Okay, I wanted to start off, and what you said was a very powerful quote by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and 100% true. And as an educator in the system, you know, the children, I see the children are being failed in a lot of instances for many reasons. However, the truth is we have failed our children. And now that the educational system has run its course, it's now time for us to intervene and get more involved into the school system. You know, I have witnessed on most occasions that a lot of things that go on in the school environment take place. And you have a lot of other groups, families that may get involved, but a lot of our Black families don't really get in, become engaged for many reasons into the system where their children are housed. And that's very important for us to really, really get involved. And we know that education actually starts from home. So I just kind of want to start that off.
I just want to chime in what my beautiful sister just said. This is Sister Lisa Muhammad. And absolutely, you know, we have failed, or the system has failed our children. First of all, there's a lot of systemic racism, just like there is in the other areas of United States, and the school system, the public school system where I worked for the last 25 years, is no different in that effort. We are failing to engage our children and to challenge them on the level they need to be challenged. A lot of people, the teachers who are teaching are, at least here in the Massachusetts, Boston area, are young white women who don't quite have enough life experience or the lens that they need. I'm not saying a white teacher can't do it at all, but I think that it's important for children to see a reflection of themselves, and it's important for us to continue to strive for black excellence and to, you know, push the sciences and the math and writing and reading. And so the other piece that the sister said about parents being engaged, I think is very, very important. You know, when we were young, when I was young, that was just recently, right? But anyway, when I was young, 2 weeks ago, no, I'm just joking. But, you know, parents said, whatever the teacher said, it's correct. Whatever happened at school, we stand behind it. But we need to be wide awake. We cannot afford to be lulled to sleep as parents. We need to be at those IEP meetings. We need to be on the board. We need to understand and ask, what's the curriculum? I remember when our son was at school, I knew the curriculum. Every single year, every semester, you know, I maybe didn't understand a new math at first, you know, but I knew the curriculum, and I looked at what they were reading, and then we talked about what they were reading at home, so I made sure they had the proper understanding of it, and so we have to be involved. We have to be at those IEP meetings, and I try to comfort parents and pull them in and say, you know, your voice matters. Never let a meeting take place. Never let a meeting take place and you aren't at the table and the other people making decisions about your children. I would also love to see us have our own schools. So I just wanted to add that piece.
Yes, ma'am. That's so important. Dr. Green, did you want to chime in?
Yes, I would. Thank you again, Sister Pam. I think it's just an absolute pleasure to be here among such great professionals. I agree with everything that Sister Lisa and Sister Lavette said. I believe adding to that is that the public school systems were not built for our children. They simply were not. And so those systems are actually doing what they were built to do. We have to be responsible for our kids. And some of the things that were discussed already, like parental engagement, being present at every single meeting, every single time, asking questions, knowing the curriculum, all of those are critical parts of our responsibility as parents and as caretakers for our own children and making sure that our children's needs are being met. And I like what was said also about having reflections of ourselves and being able to see ourselves and the teachers who are teaching us, because we know that it's important for a child's self-esteem, for their mental health, for them to be able to see someone and believe that that person is just like them, looks like them, and because they achieve, they can also achieve, and they are role models. But one of the most critical things that I heard so far, and I think it's really absolutely on point, is that parents are the first teachers, and teaching begins in the home.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much. You know, because we're going to talk about the fact that this is absolute genocide in terms of there being a depopulation agenda against black people. And one of the things we're looking at is how these schools oftentimes are not ran by people in our community. We don't really run our own schools. And so just like a brother quoted in an article called Black Progress Towards Separation and Sovereignty, what we want to do is, let me see, what did he say? He said, we're going to look at certain industries. We're going to learn about the industries instead of complaining about what the colonizers do. Now, we're going to give the knowledge tonight about what some of the practices that the colonizers do to our children in these educational environments. But what the ultimate outcome is that we want to take the industries and learn about these industries so we can monopolize. And, you know, monopolize, because we're talking about protecting our children in educational settings. So I really wanted to put that out. We can start with talking about what you all chimed in on, the issue about parents and empowering parents, you know, why is there a tendency that you all sometimes see that parents don't know that they have the responsibility, that they have, and not so much that they're not wanting to exercise it, but they just feel like they're under some kind of control of others regarding their own children? Is that something that, you know, we can talk about? What is marginalizing Black parents, young parents, poor parents from taking control of their own children's education, even if they're in these educational environments?
Yes, ma'am, Sister Pamela,
yes,
Attorney
ma'am.
Pamela, that is a very, very key question that you pose. And a lot of times the parents have not had good or positive experiences in school because there is so much racism and it affects the self-worth. So they kind of feel like someone else is trying to take the reins. But we have to realize that we're born beautiful, black, and bright. And like you said, they have to be at the table. It's imperative. That child came through their womb, and it's a partnership. There is no big I and little you when it comes to education and educating our children. It is a partnership indeed. So I wanted to say that. The other thing, you talked about depopulation, and one of the things that's been concern of mine is that they are so quick to drug our beautiful black children and to label them as special needs. Now, there may be a child who is struggling with some autism or different things. Yes, we're all different kind of learners. You know, we access knowledge and curriculum differently. But I find that sometimes they're not challenging our children enough. And when I know for a fact for young boys and girls are not challenged, they kind of want to sedate them, or if that teacher's intimidated because they're moving around or they're completing the work too quickly and the teacher's not keeping up and keeping that child engaged, right? So it's the adult's responsibility to keep the child engaged and learning. And it's also the responsibility of the parent to reinforce at home what the teacher's teaching, even if it means setting aside time for them to do homework at a table separate from the television and the PlayStation. Those are some of the small things that they can do. And I think the education is outdated a lot of the times, and so it's very difficult. Like the minister said, the educational system has run its course. But we need to make sure children are taught a knowledge of their beautiful self. They need to know that they come from greatness and that our people built the pyramids. We are the founders of mathematics and science. And a lot of times they don't want to let that curriculum in. They want to sweep it in the schools during Black History Month, but every day is Black History Day. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you. Yes, ma'am?
That was a beautiful point, Sister Lisa, what you made in regards to all of it was, especially with the SED population or special ed population. It is so true that if you were to go on any school campus and you would look at the statistics of the population of special ed children, do you know the highest number would be our black children, the highest percentage? And a lot of times, some of them do have some special ed needs, but a lot of times it's behavioral. So they put them quickly into that special ed population. And so it's really not a system that helps to help them learn or give them great support, but it really almost pushes them back, you know, maybe on a lower level, dumbed down, so to speak, because they really don't have an expectation of accomplishments for them. You know, everything is modified to the shortness. If you give a 10-question quiz, you got to give them maybe 5, maybe 4 questions. They're not really challenged like Sister Lisa said. And another thing I think that really has been a disservice in our community, in our schools, is when they say inclusion, okay? Inclusion may work to a certain degree, but I think inclusion really harms the students who are maybe on a higher level or regular ed students, because the classroom has to slow down tremendously to cater to the students who are included in the special ed students who are included in the curriculum. So they try to manufacture the system and make it one size fit all, and it's not a one size fit all, because so many different students, so many different children have different needs. So rather than addressing those needs correctly, they just try to put everybody in one space, you know, and the burden that it imposes on a lot of teachers, because you have a lot of teachers, the white teachers who come to our schools, a lot of them are not there for the longevity. They're actually there to get experience and move up to the district level. They don't want to be in that classroom with our children and caring. So, and they appear to look like they do, but all they need under their belt is that 3 years to 5 years experience, and they're out of there. But for the teachers, you normally have a lot of inexperienced teachers who work in the classroom, and some of them really don't know how to balance, you know, the situation, the learning situation in the classroom. So I know as an instructional coach, my duty was to go to the teachers and help, you know, like role play for them how to instruct and how to get the students' attention through learning activities rather than just rote memory, so to speak. So there are so many variables that that are disservicing us in our school system, and we definitely have to play a part in getting our children saved, like you said, from this system, because they're worried about so many things, you know, worried about, you know, children, the gender issue, you know, should the girls go to the boys' bathroom or the boys go to the girls' bathroom, but you got so many children that can't even pass the state test, and then they put in a situation where one of the districts I was in, the teachers are overpopulated with students. The teacher ratio is ridiculous. It's almost like a university number, you know, where the university,
yes,
you
ma'am.
Go there and you volunteer, you pay to learn. But in the school system, you may have 40 children to one teacher. So those are some
yes,
of my
ma'am.
Thoughts. Yeah.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Sister Lavette. So let me say this. We have a researcher. We have a Dr. Green is, you know, got her doctorate in researching a lot of these issues. So she's an expert. We have Sister Lisa, who is on the ground as a social worker in the schools, who know what these children are suffering from. And then we have a teacher who is also tasked with the, you know, need to teach them. So this is a well-rounded conversation. I wanted to throw that in. I think Dr. Green, did were you going to say something?
Yes. This has been a very, very rich conversation, and I really am enjoying it. And I just wanted to say that the purpose of education is it's more than just imparting knowledge. You know, it's about creating hope for a better future, for a more equitable future for all of our students. But unfortunately, when we look at the educational system, we have not seen that. You know, we talked about, you all talked a little bit about the teachers and some of them coming in, and, you know, their lifelong goal does not seem to be that love for teaching. They want to move into administrative positions or things like that. And then that makes me think a little bit about how the training of the teachers, you know, what is that all about? I think that in terms of engagement, it is important that teachers learn to engage students, but not only engage the students, but to engage the parents as well. I have, currently I'm the president of one of the PTOs that for one of my grandchildren, and I have been working with PTOs and parents for 30, 35 years, and I just, one thing that I've seen that's very interesting to me is that parents, regardless sometimes of their education, they just simply don't understand their rights. They don't know that they have certain rights, or they have the ability to question what a teacher's doing. They need to really understand the curriculum, like I heard. They need to understand that it is not only good for them to understand, but it's their responsibility, and the children will succeed and do better with teachers being engaged. That was something that was said, I don't know if it was Sister Lavette or Sister Lisa, and they were she was talking about special education and being dumbed down, that they sometimes, you know, it's a situation where the students may not even need to be in a special education classroom. Maybe it is a behavior issue. So when she began talking about that, what it reminded me of, Sister Pam, is the fact that we know that Black children are represented not only in the education and special education services, but in the criminal justice system, the juvenile justice system, and, of course, the child protective services system. And when we think of all of these different systems that impact our families and, in fact, impact our children, then that brings us back to the fact that these are indeed drivers of racial and cultural genocide, just exactly like you alluded to in the beginning, Sister Pam.
Yes, ma'am. Praise be to Allah. And you know what? I want to throw these out here, this insert. When we talk about teachers, according to some stats I saw, they're saying that 7% of public school teachers are Black, as you know, and there's 15% of Black students attend the public schools. They say more than, versus I think when you have white teachers, I believe, you know, 11% of public school principals are Black. And so I think 48%, I believe, is the number that they're saying are white teachers. And so I think that's an issue. Another issue I wanted to put out there, and because it relates, and it relates to what they call child welfare services. And there's some data that says that like $29.9 billion in federal funds, state and local funds, are spent to administer those type of programs, which we know child welfare comes into the schools. It kind of works hand in hand. I'm just going to the point of there's a lot of money being spent in environments that are sometimes detrimental to Black children. You know, we talk about the special ed. I don't know what the budget is there. And then the last thing I wanted to say about this issue is how there is a Republican lawmaker. Am I still there?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Okay, Aya. So there's a Republican lawmaker, and it was in the Final Call newspaper where this top Republican Indiana legislator on education policy, he apologized because he got caught saying or suggesting that Black students don't perform better academically because they lack respect for learning. And then he kind of had to come back, you know, and backtrack on that, even though he tried to cite statistics to back it up. So, again, we're looking at the perspectives of the people that are running these educational institutions and how the outcomes for our children are not favorable. You know, so this is what we're talking about. And I want you, Sister Lisa, if you can talk to us about the trauma. What type of trauma are these children suffering?
The first thing I want to say is that you've made some very pertinent and powerful points. And we are looking at systemic racism. And we're also looking at children who are experiencing multiple types of trauma. And, you know, and they're being put in as having learning disabilities, but anybody who knows anything about trauma, it can also present as a learning disability because children don't always have the words. Let's say if someone's witnessed, you know, lost a family member to homicide, or if they've been sexually abused, or if any of these things have happened to them, or just racism, like the whole thing when George Floyd was killed, that really shook a lot of children. It affected their self-worth, their confidence. They felt like there's no way, reason, you know, going on. How can we deal with this racism? And so trauma can present by a person losing their lack of ability to concentrate while in class and the lessons being presented. They can disassociate and look out the window and be kind of like lost in thought. And if the teacher or the social worker, hopefully not the social worker, is not trained to pick that up, it's easy to lump them in. There could be children who have low self-esteem, something as little as low self-esteem. And if they feel their going to be or have anxiety. That's another one where children might not want to raise their hand, or they might try to act out to remove themselves from the situation so that they're not forced in a situation where they're feeling anxious. You know, you have these young millennial white women who are just throwing information at them, not giving a child who does have anxiety an opportunity to process the information. I'm always giving positive, by the help of Allah, affirmations to our children when they walk in. Aren't you beautiful and bright? Not just beautiful. See, I'm going to say you beautiful and bright. Oh, shoot. What's that, a science project? Come over here and show Miss Lisa. You mean to tell me your sneakers match and you got that folding board? You know, you have the presentations. It's just about believing in them. And a little smile, they walk in. I said, you can't just be pretty or handsome. You gotta show them what you're working with. Go ahead to math, because I see you being an entrepreneur one day. And these are not just the children I work with. I interact with children. I may not even know your name, but I'm always encouraging them, and I know that there are other people on this line that do that same work. The other thing I wanted to say was, when we talk about depopulation, which is connected to racism, they are very, you talked about DSS, or we call it DSS here, but the Department of Social Services. You know,
right.
You have these people who are so quick to file a 51A, and the whole sole history of that is to break up the black family, similar to during slavery. Instead
That's
of pulling on the kin structured network. So as a black social worker and a member of the National Association of Black Social Workers, we try to say, well, is there a, let's create a respite situation. Does she have an auntie or a grandma she can stay with for a little while? Because a lot of times you put them into the foster home, and not all, but a lot of times that's where they're being abused. That's where there are locks on the refrigerator. That's where the person's just looking to collect a check, white and black, and they have them doing all these chores like during Cinderella. It's okay to have chores now. You gotta have chores, but it's over. You know, and so we talked about that. And the third thing, and I'm going to pass it on to my colleagues, is you talked about the Sister Lafette talked about, I hope I'm not mispronouncing your name, Sister, but you talked about how teachers, young teachers are coming in and they really have no intention of staying in the classroom. They need their 3 years experience and they want to move to administrative. So what does that say? You want to move into a position where you can control and write the narrative. Because if the head, body's going to follow.
That's right.
Beautiful, beautiful. Let me say this. Anyone who has a question or a comment, please press the number 1, and we'll also open up our mics for questions and comments very, very shortly. Go ahead, Sister. I think someone was going to chime in.
Yes, ma'am, Sister Pam. This is Sister Lavette. Quick question. Who was the senator or the political leader that got caught saying whatever he said, and what state was that again?
Let's see. This was an Indiana legislator by the name of Bob Benning of Indianapolis, and he made these remarks in late February of 2022, and that's what he said. He said it was a question about a bill that would make changes to the state's academic standards for all students, and so looking at black youth, that was my point. I wanted to let us know this is really what they think of us. You know, all this rhetoric about violence and all this rhetoric about how we're just more prone to failure, you know, these stereotypes. They want to build these prisons. So, you know, I wanted to bring that out. And that was in the final call. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for bringing that out on this platform. That just goes to prove, as we build this case, that where they stand, their mindset on us. Just in Houston, maybe a couple of months ago, there was a Phi Fair. I think he was elected to be a board member, and his name is Scott Henry. He insinuated that black teachers led to more dropouts in that district. So, in other words, the black teachers are incompetent educators, but all the white ones and others are the ones who get the children to graduate and do well in school. And like Sister Lisa said so beautifully, you know, feeding the encouragement and building up the children is very important, because as an educator, I did the same thing with the children. You know, try to find the positive versus the negative with them. You know, because we know our children come from so many, you know, environments where there is some type of issue going on, a lot going on at home, as they like to say it. So the people who are really heading the school system don't really care about us. And, like, I think all of us on this panel can agree that it is very important that we have a school of our own, because, you know, and one thing I noticed also as a teacher, they have what they call the snapshot students. I don't know if anybody ever heard of the snapshot students, but I'm going to let you all in on a little secret here. Snapshot students are the ones that register before October of that year, all right? Those are the students that they're going to pour a lot in.
Okay.
This is in Texas, yes, in Texas. Sorry, I should have cleared that. Those are the students that they really pour a lot into. You know, they depend on them for attendance, and, you know, it's based on the economics, because, you know, teachers get reprimanded constantly if you just get in a situation where you don't put your attendance in on time. They come in for you. They're going to make sure that you put that attendance in, because that's money that they have to budget in. So anyway, with the snapshot students, you know, these children are highly dependent on to carry the state tests and be the ones who they put a lot of energy into. So, you know, the school system is just like, you know, the disparities are so strong with our children, where, you know, they're outcast a lot of times in that system. So it's so important that, you know, parents have to be educated. We had what we called a parent university for the parents. But I think, you know, it has to be intensified, you know, because I think someone on the panel said that as a parent, when you have children, your negative experiences when you go to school, that's going to impact how you, you know, push your children through the educational system, or how you encourage them. So we have to have a type of system where we can help encourage our parents and, you know, make it a big deal about them supporting their children. You know, that's highly needed in our community.
Yes, ma'am. I'm going to go ahead and open up the mic and take a comment from Sister Ula. Sister Ula has a comment. Sister Ula?
Yes, ma'am. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa-alaykum salam, Sister Ula.
Wa-alaykum salam, ma'am.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you for having me. I have a family member who's a school teacher in Houston, and I don't want to give a name. She shared with me that she was angry because they want the teachers to teach the students that it's okay to do things that are very immoral. And you know what I mean, as far as the gay and all this other madness they got out there. I agree with you. They need to have, you need your own educational system, because the system that they have here in the United States, we were taught in educational classes that 80% of the school teachers in the public spectrum are Caucasian women, and they help their husbands to go to school to be judges. And then when these children get in trouble and they go before the judges, we already know that they're not going to get justice. Thank you for letting me share.
Oh, thank you so much for that. Wa'alaikum salam. Thank you, Sister Ula.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. And you know, does anybody want to make a comment on what she said?
I'd like to make a comment. I think that that's why it's so important that we not only have our own schools, but we can develop our own curriculum. And it's really helpful to have the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I know it was for me. But what I want to say is, a lot of times when they labor our children, or children have behavior issues, it's like the school to prison pipeline. like she's,
right.
you know, and when she talked about
that's right.
Wives supporting their husbands who become judges, you know, I hadn't heard that, but I can see that.
Wow.
And they're just gearing them up, especially our boys, but now they're targeting our young girls and just criminalizing them, you know, and in a way that's not fair or just. And so if we really want true freedom, justice, and equality, it's important to have our own schools. And I know for me, I had a child a little later in life. Allah's the best planner. But for any parent, I think just knowing that your child's all right. And I know sometimes in the Nation of Islam, we put our children in independent and private schools. Now, even though my husband's also has a master's degree in education, but our child did go to independent school because we wanted him to, you know, be challenged, and we wanted just a smaller setting. And, you know, it has its pros and cons to that, too, though. If we had an MUI, that's where he'd be. I'd be most comfortable. But he didn't at that time. There weren't a lot of children his age, you know. And but even when your children in private school, I want to say that you also have to be on top of it because they will try to break your child's spirit. You know, when they're young, they're like, oh, they're so cute. But after they hit past 5 or 6 or 7, they're trying to break them, you know. And so we can't allow that to happen. We have to do things like take them to the Black Wax Museum and where they talk about all the black inventors. I'm talking about start when they're like 6 and 7. We have to have that reading list that we do with them at home and over the summer. You go on vacation, have them write a compare and contrast. What you like best, Bermuda or Bahamas or whatever. Whatever it is, this movie or that movie. What was the same? What was different? But we have to really be on top of it. It's not just the public schools. It's also, it's a delicate dance. That's why you have to have dinner together and ask your child, what did you learn today? Oh, okay. And you debrief them. You know, and make sure they have the teachings and the knowledge of self and the knowledge of their God, their religion, their history in them. And teach them to stay prayed up.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Because what's the quote about women being the first teacher, mother being, what is the quote that we're taught?
Mothers are the first teacher.
That's right. Mothers are, and the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world.
That's right.
And,
that's right.
And I think that's so important because
well, when you teach a woman, you teach.
You know, because this, you're right. But this thought about how people will take their children to school and just drop them off, like they won't even hardly slow the car down. You're like, bye. You know, just getting rid of your child and having somebody else raising them. And it's like, ooh, that can really be dangerous sometimes.
Yes,
based on what
and
you
can't
said.
Treat
so,
your child like a package. Yeah, that's right.
Yes,
that's right.
We're going to go. We got a couple more calls and comments. Go ahead. Yes, ma'am. Did you want to finish that off, Sister Lavette?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I was just following up what Sister Lisa said. You know, you got to watch what these people are telling our children because with my son, when he was in high school, he went here in Houston, he went to an all-boys school. And the teacher of history tried to slip in the curriculum telling the children that slavery was not important and it wasn't that bad. And it was more the boys in that classroom, more Latinos and more black students. But my son came home and told me about that. And I didn't just bypass it. I went to the school. And I had a meeting with this teacher face-to-face. And, of course, he tried to downplay it. But I just let him know that I got my eyes on you and I'm watching you and I'm hearing everything that you're saying. So I'm sure from that point on, never had that problem. So sometimes you have to challenge those situations. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. We're going to take a comment
Sister Pam, can I add something to that just really quickly? We oftentimes look at, like, the curriculum and all the different things like that. I just wanted to add, sometimes things can even slip in games and things that children are taught. So I became aware that a teacher was teaching a very simple game, which is you're it. You know, I don't know, we played that even when I was a kid. And so you can maybe use something that you throw and you tag the kid and tag your it. and all of this type of thing. And what the teacher was doing is that every time that the child became it through the TAG process, then that child was placed in jail and had to stay in jail until another kid came and let the child out of jail. So it was an instant game that had turned. When I found out about it, then I went straight, I discussed it with the teacher, but when I realized that it was something that was pervasive, I went straight to the superintendent of the school district, who happened to be Black, who was very, very upset about it and made some real changes because he had a Black son. And his son had been exposed to the criminal justice system on a fluke, accused of something that he did not do, mixed up with some other person. So I just wanted to throw that in as well.
Yeah, great point, great point. Let me go ahead and take this call from Brother Jabril. Derek Jabril has a comment.
Assalamu alaikum, everybody. Yeah, I just wanted to call and just say one of the reasons why a lot of our students is not performing the way they need to perform is because I do truly believe that it's a lot, have a lot to do, especially with Black educators. Because when during my time, and I worked in the public school system for 17 years, and throughout those whole entire years, I have always witnessed how spineless a lot of the Black educators are. Now, when we look back in the 1960s during the movement, the Black educators was very, very pointed, and they was teaching the movement to the students in the classroom. Now, when you look at today, man, they have no aim. And what are we giving to the children now? Because when I was teaching there, I was putting in the supreme wisdom to the children. And the children would come back and tell me how they would take what I was teaching them back to the grandparents. So I was teaching the grandparents and the family at the same time by giving the students something that they are not getting in the public school system. Sometimes you have to be more realistic. And I don't know why some of us as Black educators feel that we don't need to put nothing extra for the children to know on the bulletin board. You know, I don't get that. Mm.
Yes, sir. That's right. And good point. Yes, sir.
I mean, that's very important to do that. Yeah, I mean, even if you tell them, look, tell them that if you can answer this question or come back and tell me what I wrote on the board, I will give you 10 extra points if you can do it.
Yes.
That'll help with the memory.
Yes.
So that's all I
call
to say. Sister Levette, you on point, sister, all of you all. I'm enjoying this.
Thank you, Brother Derek. All praise are due to Allah. Thank you.
Yes,
and we
thank you.
Sister Dora Muhammad, and she has a question. Sister Dora Muhammad. Yes, ma'am. Sister Dora?
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum.
Wow,
beautiful dialogue.
And salam, beloved.
Praises be to Allah.
Yes, ma'am. I have a question. So when they put our children on this medication, these medications, is there a penalty if the parent doesn't want to put their children on medication? Like Ritalin and all that stuff, is there a penalty for that? Like how does that work?
Great question.
They have a problem. Yes, thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam, ma'am. Did anyone want to address that question?
Well,
May I? Go ahead. Yes.
Okay, real quickly. When the sister asked that question, I know that they can make it difficult for you as a parent, you know, if you don't know your rights. So sometimes, you know, depending on the situation, they can decide to call CPS on you. If you're not doing your part or they feel like you're they can say that you're neglecting your child. So anything is really possible in a system, you know, that they orchestrate. Yes, ma'am.
Interesting. Yes, ma'am. Sister Lisa, did you want
to...
Yes, ma'am.
If it was me, I wanted to add to it as well.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry.
Whoever.
You go first.
Okay, what I wanted to say is almost exactly what was just said previously. I worked with Child Protective Services for over 38 years in every stage of service, you know, from the caseworker to the supervisor, program director, program administrator, all the way to state office and over a whole division, in fact, a disproportionality division. I had education specialists under me and et cetera. So that person that you just asked about related to medication, that's the first thing I thought about is Child Protective Services because, you know, there could be a possibility of pressure being placed on the parent, and then it becomes an issue of whether or not it's medically necessary and whether or not the parent then is providing what the child needs. But then Sister Pam can talk about the legality of all kind of issues related to that. But pressure can be placed on parents to do some things maybe that they don't feel comfortable with, but they should always know their rights and they can make decisions for their children. Now, if it's something that the child really, really, really needs and it's impacting the child's life, then really seriously you need to get different opinions. That's my professional opinion about that. You need to get a different perspective from someone else who thinks differently. And there are black doctors. There are others. There are a lot of people out there who don't always believe that the first choice is to medicate our children.
Absolutely.
Great.
I think it's a very, very
important. Yes.
Sister, thank you so much. And it is a medical because it's, you cannot tell you have to put your child on medication. This should be a doctor's. You know, you should first seek your child's pediatrician, or you should ask for, you can ask for independent psychological evaluation. That eval, don't let the school call the doctor first. No, you take charge of your post and you call and find out. Because there are some doctors in the Boston area, one in particular whose parents were in the nation, and he's very holistic, and they talk about looking at diet and taking sugar and red dyes out of the diet. There are ways, and giving them the coping skills and strategies that they need to deal with their emotions, because those are going to be more like lifelong skills. But like Sister said, if it's a major thing, your child is extremely depressed and feeling suicidal and cutting, you might want to think about something. This is a high or family history of schizophrenia, but there are holistic ways to deal with some of the things that are not as severe as that. And I do suggest the parent get their own independent consult from a doctor. And if you don't like that, consult with another doctor as well. So you're coming with knowledge, information.
Yes, ma'am. Beautiful. Beautiful. And I think I would just add, as a lawyer, I would just add that, let me see, I would just add that there are always timelines because, you know, these things are state-specific, but I believe federal may also preempt because there's that statute called IDEA, you know, which you talk about, I think, ARDS and assessments of children and progress of children and different recommendations and some of this labeling. I know when I first started practicing law, this is when some of these labels were first started, like emotionally disturbed, or, you know, these were just like catch-alls. You know, all of this ADHD and all of these diagnoses are, you know, they're fairly new. They kind of started in the 90s. So as Sister said, you know, sometimes they are very serious, but then sometimes a parent has to make sure that they exercise their right, come in for a hearing and bring in your own consultants and go through these processes. But for sometimes for poor parents, I think as a sister might be saying, out of Sister Dora might have been saying, you do feel like they can feel like they're locked in and they don't have choices. So I think that, you know, those are areas where we really need people advocating for parents and really having some of those like parents weekend programs where people can come and talk to professionals and maybe get guidance in those instances. That's just a thought I had.
And then,
so,
this is
yes, ma'am.
About
right.
Parent Institute. You know, we have it not only for parents to help them come up to speed with the new math, but also I've helped hold some of those and other clinicians on at the schools to help them know where children are developmentally. So what's normal and what's not? You know, what do you expect during adolescence? What's the pushback and pushing the lines, you know, boundaries with teenagers? what's normal and what's not normal. And the other thing I want to say really quickly, because I know we're out of time, is that it's important for parents to have what you said, Sister Pamela, an advocate. And so in addition to providing direct individual counseling and group counseling, one of my jobs was also to do psychosocial assessments when a child is recommended for special ed. And that means to go to the parent's house where they can meet me at the school, wherever they're more comfortable, do a two-hour interview and find out from the parent, what are your child's strengths and what are the weaknesses? And what have you noticed work with your child over this time? And then I find out sometimes children are in shelters at five when they're supposed to be grasping certain concepts. They don't have a disability.
Wow.
They just have some trauma and some hard times in their life. But when I get to the table, I say to the parent, let's go over the points. You're going to role play with me so we can build your confidence. And I'm going to save you a seat right next to me in that meeting. And we're going to make sure your points get on the table. And then I try to make an effort to go around the table and have each person introduce themselves and to look at that child. I force them to look at the child from a strength perspective. Because a lot
That's
of times
right.
they can just say, oh, this child is problem, oh, he's talking out in class. No, okay, I won't hear all that yet. I want you to tell me three things you know about this child from the strength perspective. They're bright, they're articulate, they're well-groomed, whatever. You know, they're ambitious. And then we can talk about the gaps. And after we talk about the gaps, let's talk about how it's the adults in the room, including the parent and the teachers and the social workers. What are we going to do to help close
That's
the gap?
Right.
But we're not going to vilify our children, not with Ms. Muhammad in the room. Not going to go down like that.
That's
Praise
right.
Praise be to Allah. Thank you. Yes, ma'am. We're going to take this question or comment, actually, from Sister Lisa from Boston. As-salamu alaykum, Sister Lisa.
Wa alaykum as-salam. Panel is very well informed. They're giving out good information. And I just want to comment on the fact that since we're going to educate our children, we need to start with an education system that we will create ourselves, because the education system that we have before us is not working. It's broken. And for example, I was working with some students, and they were teenagers. They did not know how to write in cursive. They did not know how to even tell time. So I said, this is a problem. So I think, you know, I just need the sisters to comment on how can we come up for the future of our children, have a curriculum that's designed to educate and treat our and teach our children further into what they have to become as an adult. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank
oh, yes.
you,
May
Lisa.
I?
Beautiful. Go right here. Yes,
May
ma'am.
I? Yes,
ma'am.
Ma'am.
Go right here.
And that was beautiful, Sister Lisa. Yes, we definitely have to redo everything that has been given to us, reinstruct, redirect, reconstruct. When you were speaking, it made me think about a truth. A lot of people didn't know this, but did you know that they took out, when we were coming up, we learned phonics and we learned how to blend our words. We knew what a vowel was, what a consonant was. They removed that out of the school system, and they replaced it with sight words.
Right.
Now, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said that millions of people graduate from high school, but they're still illiterate. How could that be if you made it all the way to 12th grade and you finished? Well, let me tell you what sight words do. Sight words do not teach you how to read. Sight words teach children how to guess. That's why when you get children reading and they start guessing a lot of words, they're supposed to be based on familiarity. That's how what sight words do. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They don't teach you. It's like a lot of skip information. See, if you don't teach the child phonics, how to sound the word, how to blend the word, how to what a vowel is, what it sounds like, the, you know, A, E, I, if you don't know all of that, you know, then you really don't learn how to read properly. So they kind of like pushed us, you know, on through the system. And there's another thing that they do with us. It's called social promotion. When you get too grown to be in a certain grade or too old, they're going to go ahead and move you to the next level. Now, you done missed a whole lot of important essentials on subjects, but because you don't fit in a certain category now, and you know, they don't care whether you know or not, because remember, it's based on economics, you know, you get the attendance, then they get paid. So we have to start to answer Sister Lisa's question. I know I said a whole lot, but we got to start from the basics. We really, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, we should be teaching our children how to read, write, and arithmetic. That's mathematics. Instead of worried about this gender issue, whether you want to be this, that, or the other, we need to be teaching our children. See, the focus is off in the classroom. They got us all distracted. Our children are distracted. But it needs to go back to the basics, the essentials, and build up from there. That's how we start to educate our children. You know, we got to have a new mindset, because the old mind got to be put away and, you know, thrown in the trash in file 13, as my mom used to say it. But we definitely need to start over. And we have learned, like you said, I think you said that at the beginning, Sister Pam, you know, we look at the system and we gain from it. Ma'am. We've learned that this is not helping us, so we got to create our own.
That's right. And we have a ministry of education, so the points you're making are really good. And I want to just quote this 2022 article. So for those of you all who want to do this, they say that in 2022, the reading scores are low. They are the lowest. They're a 20-year low. That's Virginia, one study found. And then actually, according to this article, Sister Lisa, they're saying in the Boston region, 60% of students at some high poverty schools have been identified as high risk for reading problems. This is according to, I think, a Wall Street Journal article by Dana Goldstein. So I think it provides an opportunity. That's what I wanted to put out there. We have an opportunity to help our children, tutor our children, and provide the resources that Sister Lisa brought up.
Thank you.
Yes,
ma'am. I wanted to also point out, you know, America's systemic disproportional legacy that we've all, you know, we all know about this. This is something that has occurred, started back in slavery. So the school systems were not designed for our children, and all those their legislatures and all these things enacted, you know, a long time ago so that black kids and white kids could ride the same buses and attend the same schools, it's never been the same. We need our own schools. We need to teach our own children. We need to develop our own curriculum. And I wanted to just bring that out. These that say it over and over again that the schools are doing exactly what they were designed to do, which is to not teach our kids to be self-sufficient, to be empowered, to live lives in which they are in control of their own communities. Their own communities are made safe places to live. So we need to be responsible for our own children and how they view themselves as well. I wanted to make a quick point, though, about something that Brother Derek said. And Brother Derek was talking about the teachers and black teachers and, you know, that they needed to basically, I'm just changing what he says, but I'm summarizing it in two words. They need to step up. And they need to step out, I'll add two more words, to be able to teach a curriculum and provide kids with what they need. And even in terms of writing something on the bulletin board, sharing some, imparting some knowledge. And he was questioning, why are they not doing this? And what it reminded me of is the same thing that happened within, or that still happens within child welfare. In the state of Texas, especially, you know, we were looking at, in the Houston region, the fact that we had so much disproportionality. In other words, kids came into the system, black children came into the system, more of them came in, and then when they entered the system, they stayed longer. And why is this when you have more black than you have white staff? So we researched that question, and what we came up with is this one fact, and that is that when we're all institutionalized by the same system, regardless of whether or not you're black or white, you can come up with the same results. So we have to be awoke. I think someone said something like that earlier. We have to be aware awoke, and then we have to take steps to make changes for ourselves, because we are the ones who are in charge of our own future and not others.
Yes, ma'am. Beautiful. And I want to interject because we got a couple more callers, but I think also the decision-making, you know, roles are sometimes occupied by non-blacks, you know, Caucasians or the bosses or the hierarchy. So they make those rules and policies. And sometimes you have good teachers get penalized for trying to do something outside of, you know, what is expected. And so, you know, that whole slavery punishment thing, like if you're trying to do something good, they bring you out and punish you. So nobody else is going to want to do anything. So the system is really just rotten. I mean, we saw in Judge Jackson's Supreme Court hearings where they were talking about, we just care about the children. And we see that. I'm sorry, I kind of ran on, but Deborah, she can attest to, you know, this is what we're always talked about is the best interest of black children, but the numbers are just getting worse. The children are dying. They're going to prison. They're not getting educated. So it's something really wrong. But great, great comment, Sister Deborah. I want to go ahead and take Sister Marguerite has a comment. Yes, Sister Marguerite.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamualaikum.
I'm
waiting to my sisters, and you all having a wonderful conversation here, and it's I'll only just make a comment on a couple. I know in the Black Woman's Forum that I belong to in Arizona, that one of our points was to educate the parent, because a lot of things were happening to our children. They were ending up in jail, and the parents knew nothing about what was going on. But I know with my own grandson, when the teacher came to his father about, well, he needs Ritalin, he needs to be medicated, I knew enough to tell him, you tell them you want him tested. So this is what we would tell all the parents that would come to our program when they said that the teachers want it, you have them tested. And most of the time, those children were gifted. They tested to be gifted. My grandson and many others, they just don't want to do the work, and they don't want to educate our black children.
That's right.
And that goes to the point of the sister saying, you know, I had children late in life also, but all praise is due to Allah, because it helped me go to another level with really dealing with children. And so they would come home to me and tell me what the teacher had done, and I would deal with it. But after a while, I didn't have to deal with it because they had been trained so well, and we talked every day about what it is they had to face. They ended up dealing with issues themselves, and one of the issues was one of his history teachers was putting down the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and my son stood up and said, you know, that ain't going to happen. You know, this, what you're saying is not true. And so the teacher told him to go out of the class. He put him out of the class. And my son went and waited. And this teacher happened to be a JFK research fanatic. And so as he was discussing with the teacher why he said what he said, you know, one of the things he said was, you don't know the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I said, but what if I was to tell you Oswald did it? And so the teacher stopped and said, you got a point there. So he never had an issue with that teacher again, you know, because that was something he had learned at home. And our people have to be taught how to be parents. We don't know how to be parents. If I hadn't had the Nation of Islam, I wouldn't have known how to be a parent. So all praises are due to Allah for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
Yes, ma'am. Praises be to Allah. Thank you, Sister Marguerite, for that comment. We have one more comment from Sister Mama Sonia has a comment. Sister Mama Sonia, welcome.
Hi. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Assalamu alaikum. I love the last two comments. As someone, unfortunately, everyone can homeschool their children and everybody can't put their children in private schools or smaller settings. So we have the public education at our disposal. But I think as parents and activists, it is up to us to go down to that school board, let them know what we need. Go to the school. My child was never in any school. She did go to a combination of private school and public school. And at every PTO, every PTA, every organization, I was always on the board. I made sure that I was involved in everything that they did. And it goes us, for us. And many parents aren't able to go down there because they do have to work. So it's up to us who can go there. Go to the school. If you know that Sister So-and-so has to work and her child needs somebody at the school, then we need to step up. It takes a village to raise a child. We are the village and these are our children. But it's very important. And like the last sister just said, people need to learn how to be parents. I mean, it's not, I mean, that this is the most important job on earth that is on the job training. That you don't get anything before. But I think when we have a village, a correct village of people, parents, teachers, aunties, uncles, everybody who's around, it takes all of us to help raise these children. Something else I just heard somebody said, I was teaching at a home school, and I asked the children to give me a report, and they printed it. These were oldest. They did not know how to do cursive writing. And so for the next couple of days, we had lessons of cursive writing.
Yes, ma'am.
Because they need
to
know how to do
it.
Yes,
ma'am.
But just, we just need to work together.
Great point.
This is not a job
Good
that we
point.
Do alone. We have to come together, all of us, and work
yes,
together
ma'am.
Because these are our children.
Praise be to Allah. Thank you so much for that comment, Sister Mama Sonia. And also, we have our next person. We have our sister, Dr. Ava Muhammad. She's on the line. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Dr. Ava.
Wa alaikum salam, Sister Pamela. I just wanted to congratulate you and this panel and hope we can really promote this program for numerous replays. Sister Lisa Muhammad, Dr. Deborah Green, Sister Lavette Muhammad, you have been so insightful in what you're bringing to all of us. And as the last caller just pointed out about parenting, it's the most important assignment we get from God. And it's all about being aware of our power. I always use the example when I was living in Atlanta. There, the big chain store is Publix, a supermarket chain. And when you went to Publix in the Jewish community, the newspapers were from Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. And the shelves were heavily stocked with the food items that they prefer. And you'll see the same thing in the Latino community. We end up getting all of the foods that are left over, unwanted, old, because we're not coming together and we're not making the demands. And that's all we have to do. You know, we can determine what the retailers, even though we're dominating the consumer end, we've been kicked out of manufacturing and production, but the way to work our way back into that power is to exercise our power as consumers. If we don't buy something, if we stop buying it, it'll disappear from the shelves. If we
That's right.
purchase a particular item in great numbers, it will appear, you know, in
yes,
a higher ma'am. Inventory, you know, and we're just not we're not committed enough, and I appreciate the commitment of all of you to our children. I've got a 5- and 6-year-old now, a 5-year-old granddaughter, 6-year-old grandson, and it's just, you know, resurrected my intense desire for us to return to doing for self. And I'll just say lastly, I wanted to add to the stories that were told when my daughters were in elementary school. They attended this black elementary school, a magnet school in Atlanta. And as one of you said,
it doesn't matter what the race is if the teachers are institutionalized. And one of the teachers, my daughter came home. My husband always would debrief them when they came home. And she said, oh, yeah, the teacher was talking about how we became slaves. And my husband said, became? So
yes,
she said, are you sure that's the word that she used? And she said, yes, Daddy. And he went over there and talked to her. He said, you realize became implies it was a level of achievement? You know, which feeds into this idea we were swinging on trees and we were semi-animals, and that you did us a favor, you being, and this is a black teacher, but, you know, that narrative that we're lucky to be here. And so, as you all are saying, sometimes you just have to go over there and make your presence known. If just a few of us did that, it would put them on alert. But this practice now of just dropping our children off or having someone else drop them off, and they disappear into some building, and we don't even go in to see what's going on. But thank you all so much. Assalamu alaikum.
Well, thank you. Praises be
thank
to Allah.
You.
All praises
yes, ma'am.
To Allah. Thank you, Sister Minister Ava. Assalamu alaikum. So did anyone else have any comments that they wanted to make regarding, you know, we were taking callers, did we have some thoughts that we wanted to put out? Because one of the things I did want to end on is the issue about the pandemic and how the pandemic has caused a lot of disruptions, has caused a lot of changes. You know, this narrative that we're seeing where they're starting to accuse our youth of being, you know, very violent without a, you know, cause. There's no empathy in the fact that our children have been, you know, held up. They've been locked up, locked down. Studies like the Final Call have shown that there have been major negative effects from these lockdowns and social distancing policies. You have other articles that are talking about the drop in scores. There's another article in this week's Final Call that talks about the mental capacity, I think, measuring children's intellectual quotient. Researchers are finding that there's a 23% drop. This is according to an article in the Final Call. They're saying that it came during the pandemic, perhaps, comparing 2011 to 2020 and 21, I believe. So, you know, does anyone who's been on the ground, did you want to share some of what you've been seeing? Just Lisa, just Lavette.
Yes, ma'am. I'll share. And I would say that, Dr. Deborah Green. Okay.
I would
say that the level of stress, you know, that it's been unprecedented in terms of, because we are dealing with something that's very different than the norm. And I think in terms of what happens to the parents and the family happens to the children. So parents are, you know, some parents are taking the shot. Grandparents are taking the shot. People are dying as a result of that, and children are stressed out about that, because whatever happens to the family happens to the child. There's you can't have something going on in the family and the child, actually, you can protect your children to a certain extent, but if dad no longer has a job because of whatever the situation is, and they're now in a worse poverty situation than they were before, the child feels the stress. If someone dies,
right,
again, the child feels the stress. So there are things that are happening with the children within the family, and then when they go back to school, it's not a normal environment any longer. So they're having to adjust, to adapt, and to deal with it. So I would say that the stress is real, but our children are resilient. Our people are resilient. We wouldn't be able to have survived, you know, the slave ship if we hadn't been resilient. So whatever we're going through right now, I believe that we can rise above that, but we have to understand what's going on, and that, as a sister said, understand our power and then take some action.
Ma'am, thank you for
and
that.
Sister Pam, I agree with what Dr. Green just said, that there was a lot of things, like COVID was basically the catalyst for a lot of changes in the school system and in children's lives. And mental health definitely has impacted that, from them having maybe they were disrupted through isolation and anxiety issues. And some of them even suffered with a lot of depression. And on another level, going in another direction, you know, the another area that COVID may have impacted for us, which was a low area, was homeschooling. A lot of Black families decided that they wanted to homeschool their children, and they realized that they could actually do it and were very successful at it. You know, they produced a lot of positive from that. So it may have caused some negative, definitely
yes,
some negative disruptions, but it also, like Sister
definite positive.
Yeah, like
yes,
sister just said, that it made us see that we're resilient. You know, you can hold, you can try
crazy
to hold us back, but you can't hold us down too much longer, because we got to find a way out. And a lot
yes,
of families saw that they were doing good at that. Yes, ma'am.
Praise be to Allah. We're down to our last, like, 3 minutes. Sister Lisa, can you please close us out with any comment that you have on this issue, please? What have you seen during the pandemic? Any word of wisdom you want to give us in closing? Yes, ma'am. Well, I'm not really sure, but I'm all for all of this great information, and I love that everybody got a chance to really chime in regarding us advocating for our children, because I think as I started this show, I wanted to say, I heard Brother Minister Nuri, Student Minister Nuri Muhammad, he was talking to some youth at a school, and he gave compliments to the teachers and those who work in the facility. He said, y'all the real MVPs, because people who work with students, they're people who work for not just because of the pay. You know, they work because they're talented and they want to give that talent to our youth. And so I want to commend you all for your dedication to our youth, as well as when we look at the what and the why, because our question was protecting children. So I had a big thing about the what, you know, these disciplinary issues, this trauma, these dropout rates, these academic issues are getting very, very serious if they weren't always. So that makes a real big, like Sister Dr. Ava said, we have to take back our power and make these decisions. And I think knowledge and, you know, encouragement, you all have been so beautiful. So, like I said, we're down to the 1 minute. And in closing, does anyone have any information on how they could be reached that they want to share? Yes, Sister Dr. Green, did you want to share any information on how you can be reached, or Sister Lavette, anyone? Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes,
yes ma'am. Dr. Green, go ahead, and then I'll go after you.
Oh no, I can. You can go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I can be reached. As you said earlier in the program, I'm working on having my own child care service, and so I can be reached by email. Caring with a K, K-A-R-I-N-G, the number 4, and the word life, L-I-F-E-L-L-C, at gmail.com.
Okay. And Dr. Green, go ahead and tell us, and I'm going to close this out.
Okay, thank you. I can be reached, and again, I am the president of Black Child Development here, Institute in Houston, and so I can be reached there. My email address is Houston, H-O-U-S-T-O-N, at affiliates, that's spelled A-F-F-I-L-I-A-T-E-S .NBCDI .ORG.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. And I would like to just say thank you all for listening to the Elevated Places Network presents A Time for Justice. I would like to thank the Elevated Places team. I want to thank my producer, Sister Samaya Muhammad. I would like to thank Sister Donna Muhammad, Brother Terrence Muhammad. And, of course, I want to thank Sister Minister Ava Muhammad and encourage us all to listen to Ask Dr. Ava. That is the show that comes on Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Thank you once again for listening, and tune in next week for more informative discussions. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Wonderful show.